A lot of men today, even men in powerful positions, especially men in journalism, they're softer. They're what a friend of mine calls NPR men. They want to know about your feelings, whether you're enchanted.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving. Ken Rudin will join us when he has washed his hands.
Ron, I have washed my hands of this entire podcast.
Yes,
but I have not washed my hands of the first 100 days of the Obama administration, which we, the American people, celebrated with gusto this week.
Absolutely. In fact, it was a milestone that grew as the day even went on. All kinds of news events took place. Everybody seemed to join in. Even the markets went up 2% on the president's 100th day.
The markets went up some points, and the number of Democrats in the Senate went up 1 point.
And one significant point, because it brings them to 59, which is right next to 60. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. But I have to ask you, Ken, because this has really become the question before the nation. What has in the first 100 days of the Obama administration surprised, troubled, enchanted, and humbled you?
Well, I think one is that Joe Biden is still vice president.
Yes, and working hard at raising that question in people's minds.
Yes.
Here he is the morning after the news conference on the NBC Today show.
I wouldn't go anywhere in confined places now. It's not that it's going to Mexico. It's you're in a confined aircraft. When one person sneezes, it goes all the way through the aircraft. That's me. I would not be at this point if they had another way of transportation, suggesting they ride the subway.
And, of course, right after that, as the airlines were still coming out of cardiac arrest, Mr. Biden's spokesperson explained.
They said that Mr. Biden meant to say that he was taking the Amtrak to Guadalajara first thing in the morning.
Joe Biden, still vice president, and Barack Obama looking forward to his second 100 days. Ken, what do you anticipate being the media fascination with the second 100 days?
My problem with the 100 days is that we knew starting on January 20th exactly when the 100 days would come.
Well, and those of us who are not too math challenged.
Right, exactly. But the Arlen Specter thing, however, that was a shocker. You know, for those of us jaded.
What we call news.
It was news.
It was not anticipated.
Not anticipated at all, even though everybody said from day one, well, you know, he's going to have a big problem in next April's primary. Pat Toomey is going to probably beat him. He has a big lead right now. There's no way he survives as a Republican. Yet, over and over again, Arlen Specter said, I am not switching parties. I am a Republican, blah, 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 blah.
And most people thought that's right, that he can't win as an independent. He can't do a sore loser like Joe Lieberman did. State law prevents him. So he has to choose parties, and he's surely not going to change to an outright Democrat after 40 years as an office holder in the Republican Party.
Although what's shocking to me is when I heard the bulletin on the wire says Arlen Specter switches parties, I thought he became a Republican.
Look, we've got a really serious problem here for Republicans because they have to react to this in one of two ways. Either they say, this is terrible, we really regret it, wow, what a drag, we're down to 40 seats in the Senate, or they come out snarling, as many did, and they say, you know what, we're glad to have him go. One of the regular commentators on Fox, Charles Krauthammer, said, he's a hack. Who cares? And I think that there was an awful lot of that as the predominant reaction among conservatives. We're just as glad to have him go, and we'll take our lumps in the Senate.
I think there's a lot of people who truly feel that. I don't think it's fake. The problem with Arlen Specter is that he's alienated people in both parties throughout his whole career. He voted against Robert Bork. He voted for the president's economic stimulus package, only one of three Republicans.
And then he voted against the president's budget yesterday, one of only three Democrats.
Right, but he also voted for Sam Alito, and he voted for John Roberts, and he voted for Clarence Thomas when he grilled Anita Hill. So the
He devastated Anita Hill.
Yeah.
And there are some Democrats, there are some people
have not forgotten or forgiven.
Respective of a party have not forgotten or forgiven him for Anita Hill.
Exactly.
I suspect Anita Hill has not forgiven him.
Exactly
for
right.
Hill.
So what's interesting about this whole thing is that, you know, we could talk about the history and what's happened to the Republican Party. It's the first time since the 1970s where any party will have 60 votes or more. Democrats had 61 as of 1978.
Many of them were Southerners and were quite conservative and were not really with the president's program or National Democrats. For
right,
that.
And 2 years later with Ronald Reagan elected, 13 more Republicans came in, so it didn't last long. But this is different. When we saw with the Civil Rights Revolution, we saw a lot of conservatives leaving the Democratic Party to become Republican. Now we're seeing moderates, forget about elected officials, some 200,000 Pennsylvania Republicans switched last year to the Democratic Party. That's one of the reasons that Arlen Specter was not going to survive a primary next year, because his constituency was gone.
His constituency was changing parties or just disappearing.
And that's the problem that the remaining Republicans feel, not only the Olympia Snows and the Susan Collinses, but the John Cornyns and the Mitch McConnells. Where are they going to get the votes of the candidates to remain a viable party?
It's entirely possible that they're starting to think beyond 2010. If you look at the 10 states that currently have one Democratic senator and one Republican senator, all but one has a Senate race on the ballot in 2010. Seven out of the nine that are on the ballot next year voted for Barack Obama in 2008. Unless there is a dramatic reversal in the Barack Obama presidency between now and the fall of 2010, something we certainly don't rule out, the Democrats are almost sure to pick up additional seats in the Senate in the next election. I think the GOP is starting to look beyond 2010.
Well, although, I mean, first of all, November 2010 is a lifetime away from now.
A lifetime?
If you're just born today.
It would be your entire lifetime.
It would. If the economy doesn't improve, if the situation with the banking industry and the auto industry and all that stuff does not improve, and assuming there is a Republican alternative to that, the Republicans might find themselves in a pretty good position in 2010.
We should certainly observe that the last time the Republicans were this far down or anywhere near this far down in the Senate was in 1993 and 1994, and they took over the Senate in the very next midterm election. Go back to the 60s, in the 1965 year when the Democrats hit this stratospheric number in the House and Senate, the Republicans had a huge comeback year immediately in 1966. So there is precedent for thinking that the low point is immediately superseded by a great leap forward.
The difference, of course, is that we're only 100-plus days into the administration, but Barack Obama remains very popular. Bill Clinton in 1993-94 was not popular. Lyndon Johnson in 65 and 66 was not popular. So we have to see where the presidency, the state of the presidency is.
Absolutely. There were errors and there were events that brought down LBJ and his party, that brought down Jimmy Carter and his party in the late 70s, and Bill Clinton and his party in the early 90s. But there will be errors and events that are adverse to Barack Obama's political magic right now. In the next 18 months, it's an absolute certainty. Errors and events happen to every president.
President Obama at the news conference said something interesting about Arlen Specter, and he said that he has a sense that Specter has been liberated by the move. He'll still be iconoclastic. He'll still be a maverick. But there are some things that he was nervous about because he had this Republican primary hanging over his head, which he no longer has. So we expect by mid-June, perhaps, we'll have Al Franken in Minnesota to give them 60. But
does that really get them what people call it, a filibuster-proof Senate?
That's been the magic, the holy grail. With Arlen Specter, does it make a big difference?
You know, it's easy to idealize the thought of 60 votes and say, wow, if we only had 60 votes, we could stop filibusters with just the votes of our own caucus. So you've got 60 votes. One of them belongs to Joe Lieberman, who can be quite different from the National Party on some issues. Ben Nelson from Nebraska.
Evan Bayh, explain that to me.
Evan Bayh of Indiana used to be somebody who was seen as moving to the left, certainly to the left of most people in Indiana, popular in his state nonetheless, running for a national kind of position. And when he was doing that, of course, he was quite visibly voting with the leadership and for a liberal agenda in the Senate. Most recently, he's voting against the president's budget. Suddenly, he's become a problem vote for Harry Reid in the Senate. And then, of course, at some point or another, when you start to accommodate those guys, you're going to find yourself losing some people over on the left, and there are iconoclastic characters over on the left for the Democrats. So there are all sorts of question marks about whether or not 60 is truly filibuster-proof. My guess is it's not. They won't be able to hold all the Democrats together. They'll still need to bring over Republicans if they want to stop a filibuster. One thing I think a lot of people are asking is, what did Arlen Specter get for switching parties from Harry Reid and the rest of the Democrats in the Senate, and maybe from Barack Obama?
Well, first of all, a lot of the Democrats are not lying down and willing to give up their own positions on committees, if not subcommittee chairmanships, for Arlen Specter. I mean, they battled him for a long time, even though ideologically he may be pretty close to Democrats, but they didn't love him. No, I mean, nobody loves Arlen Specter. Barbara Mikulski was quoted this week saying,
I'm not stepping aside for any Arlen Specter.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, she's not.
So it's very interesting to see how many Democrats say, welcome in, you know, the water is fine, but I don't want to sacrifice my career in the Senate to give up my chairmanship for somebody who's been a Republican for 40 years.
It's highly unlikely that any senator is going to say, gee, I'm so glad to have you over here with us, Arlen. I'll give up that chairmanship
When Jim Jeffords did switch parties in 2001, Democrats did agree to do that. But the difference there is that Jim Jeffords made them all majority members.
Exactly. That's right. They all became chairs.
Right.
And they weren't chairs at all before that. One of the people who got out on the floor and gave a speech against that whole bargain, by the way, and said, this is outrageous,
was the guy
changing.
Named control inspector
was him. That's because right. He had just lost the Judiciary Committee chairmanship gavel to Pat Leahy. So still in all, they're going to find something for him. If Robert Byrd retires, if he leaves the Senate in the next couple of years before they have to have the hour of truth about this, I suspect they'll find some place in the entire appropriations power hierarchy for Spector to get a chair.
There's a thought also that Arlen Specter would love to be Judiciary Committee chairman again, currently held by Pat Leahy. Leahy does have more seniority than Arlen Specter, but if Leahy would move to appropriations, perhaps Specter could take Judiciary.
I think they can work something out. It just won't happen in this Congress. It'll have to be after he gets elected, if he does get reelected in 2010. And that is by no means a certainty.
Speaking of uncertainty, do we agree that Pat Toomey will be the Republican nominee? There's been a lot of speculation on a lot of blogs in Pennsylvania that if they could only bring back the late Tom Ridge, I say the late with quotes because Tom Ridge hasn't run for anything in a long time and he's shown no indication that he wants to return to electoral politics. Remember when John Cornyn, the chairman of the NRSC, endorsed Arlen Specter over Pat Toomey a few weeks ago, he said, look, Arlen Specter could win statewide, Pat Toomey can't, and that's the name of the game.
I think he was right when he said that, and of course it's terribly embarrassing for him now to have that truth stated by him. But I don't think Tom Ridge is going to come back to run for the Senate seat. If he had the fire in the belly to do it, we would have seen Tom Ridge out there mixing it up in Pennsylvania politics in recent years.
There's a great trivia, a little point about Pennsylvania, that since the 1950s, Democrats have won the governorship two times in a row, then Republicans. It's been on and off since the 1950s with Ed Rendell term limited in 2010. It's now the Republicans' time. But again, this is a different Pennsylvania, different dynamics, different demographics.
We don't see right now a big movement on the part of the Republicans to broaden their base, to make people who are pro-choice more welcome in the party again. We just had Michael Steele on All Things Considered this week talking about how, yeah, sure, we're a big tent party, but people have to recognize that one part of the party is predominant, that they are the hosts, if you will. That was the analogy that he used, that you're coming to their house to have dinner. And as long as that's the case, as long as the Republicans are, in a sense, hardening their base rather than trying to broaden it, I don't see a lot of opportunity for the Tom Ridges.
One more thing about Michael Steele. You mentioned that he talked about a big tent, but at the same time, almost immediately after Specter, Snow, and Collins voted for the stimulus package, he said, that's unacceptable. We're going to perhaps look for challenges, primary challenges to these three senators.
Primary challenges to incumbent
Republicans
senators in the minority.
Own party. Right,
yes,
exactly.
An extraordinary thing to say, but again, an example of hardening the base as the long-term strategy. Many in the Republican Party feel that by being more purely the conservative party than they've been in recent years, that is their redemption.
The other big news in Washington this week is the reaction to the swine flu outbreak. Many people are suffering. Many people have died. And yet, not to put it in crass terms, but certainly in a political sense, one person in Washington did benefit from this story.
Well, that would be Kathleen Sebelius, who was nominated to be Secretary of Health and Human Services
and had
confirmed. Been held up.
Right.
And she got confirmed this week, largely because what had been an argument over abortion and her position on abortion.
And the money she received from late-term abortion doctor in Kansas, which a lot of Republicans made a big deal of.
That had been hanging up her nomination, but because of the sudden occurrence of this outbreak and everyone's concern about not having a Secretary of Health and Human Services at a time like this, suddenly they bring her nomination to the floor, and by a lopsided vote, she is quickly confirmed.
And right before President Obama's 100th day, his cabinet is now finally complete.
Finally complete.
And, you know, we talked a lot this week about the party switching, and, of course, the Arlen Specter party switching. The new governor of Kansas is now Mark Parkinson, who until 2006 was the state Republican Party chairman, who became a Democrat to run with Kathleen Sebelius for lieutenant governor and now becomes governor. So he, too, is a party switcher, although he will not run for a full term in 2010.
And that's it for this week's political podcast. We do want to say a special thanks to our friend Bernard Goldberg for the shout-out.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger.